Hello, everybody, and welcome to Season Ticket. I'm your host, Chris Gasper. It's Friday, December 1st. We have a great show for you today and a very special guest. We are joined by Boston Celtics co-owner, CEO, and managing partner, Wick Grousbeck. Wick, thanks for joining us here on Season Ticket.
Chris, glad to be here.
Yeah, great to have you here, and it's a great time to talk Celtics. You guys get another win last night against the Philadelphia 76ers, 108-97 at TD Garden. You're now 19-4 on the year. That's the best record in the NBA. I have to say, Wick, I did not see this coming. After Gordon Hayward went down just 5 minutes and 45 seconds into the opener in Cleveland, did you see this record coming and that 16-game winning streak that fueled it?
No way. I hoped that with our team that we thought we had together, we could be a team that surprised everybody like the 07-08, just in terms of going on streaks and being super good. I thought we had the makings of a really good team, but then seeing Gordon go down so horrifically, I've got to say I was just thinking we'd be scrapping to be just scrapping. We'd be scrapping and trying to build and see if we could survive the year. And they were off to a much better start than I thought.
What were your emotions when Gordon did go down?
Oh, it's horrifying. You know, for him, really. It's certainly a politically correct or whatever, a marketing spin move. It probably sounds like to say, really, you just think about him. But knowing him as I have just barely started to get to know him at the time, but knew he's a great guy and his wife and young family. And just I really did think of them. They made a huge move to come to us, and then here he is in pieces on the court. It was just heartbreaking for him and Robin, and then you start to think, oh boy, it's bad for us too.
Yeah, obviously very disappointing for Gordon and his family. I think sometimes people forget, right, Wick, these guys aren't just basketball players, they're human beings. There was a lot of upheaval for them to move their family from Utah. They just got here, and now they have to deal with that, and that's tough.
Chris, you know, the cliche, the line everybody says is, it's a business. And the fact is, it's not a business. Nobody I know around the Celtics, for sure, thinks the Celtics is a business. It's a labor of love. It's a great passion. It's a tradition. We don't run it like a business. We do have business aspects to it, but we run it for love. And the people, and you can start with Brad Stevens and the way he loves the team and the players, and you can talk with about Kyrie Irving. You know, there's a lot of love going around this team. It's not a business, and that's why it's going well this year. Maybe that's a whole different topic, but anyway, it was really tough to see Gordon lying there, and then the way everybody's rallied around him has been inspiring.
Yeah, it definitely says something about the character of your team. I think a lot of Celtics fans, Wick, want to know, is there any chance Gordon can come back this year from that dislocated ankle and fractured tibia?
Well, I've been told that it's a long road back, but it's better to have broken a bone than not to, in a sense. Breaking a bone is something, look at Paul George, who had a different injury, but a horrific break.
Oh, that one was horrific.
And he's back playing at an all-NBA level. So we're very hopeful that Gordon come back over the long term, but we don't have any predictions about when that's going to be. And we have the disabled player exception for the year. You know, so that tends to show you where everybody thinks. The medical community doesn't think he's rushing back anytime soon. We won't rush him back.
You mentioned that disabled player exception for $8.4 million. There are obviously some stipulations in terms of using that. Has to be a player who's in the last year of his contract. What would you peg, Wick, as the likelihood that you guys do use that exception this year?
Well, I've never actually, or if I did, it was a slip or a mistake, really predicted what we'll do with contracts. It's not my mindset. We're going to maintain all of our flexibility, all of our options with that. But fans know over 15 years, we do everything we can to put the best possible team out there on the court. If we see an opportunity to use that, I'm sure we'll use it.
Speaking of putting the best possible team on the court, you had a great team last year. Number one seed in the East, 53 wins, go to the Eastern Conference Finals. That team with Isaiah Thomas, Jay Crowder, Avery Bradley was special. It had a real emotional bond with the fan base and I think a real emotional bond with each other. But did you know at the end of that year that as much as we love this team, it's simply not good enough as is to win a championship?
That's how I felt, and I have to approve these trades and help in the gestation of them and the approval process, and if I'm not happy, they don't happen. So I approved the trade and the moves over the summer because I didn't feel that we were at a championship contender level, and I didn't see us getting there necessarily. I loved the guys, and there was an unbelievable bond, but we changed 11 guys out of 15 because my job is to get us all the way back.
Yeah, and I talked with another one of the owners, your co-owner, Steve Pagliuca, and he basically said the same thing, that when you guys bought this team 15 years ago, right?
Yep.
That the idea was, you know, you guys were interested in championships. That's what drives it every day. And in order to do that, you needed a transcendent talent. I think Kyrie Irving is that transcendent talent.
Kyrie Irving is absolutely unbelievable as a person, as a player, bonding the team together the way he's a giver. He actually gives a lot to the younger guys on the team. He gives it a lot to the fans. That's what he is, and it's been a real pleasure seeing him here. I think the real key to this team is the teamwork, though. It's not just one, and Kyrie says he's a partner with Al and Gordon and everybody else and Brad, and that's how he feels about it. So it's really sort of the mindset, and then guys like Kyrie in within that mindset and helping create it and take it to another level.
If Kyrie Irving had not been available, would Isaiah Thomas still be here, or did you guys have concerns, you know, about the hip or something else that would have led you to move on from him?
No, the Isaiah thing came up because Kyrie was available, and it made us think, and it was very, very hard to trade somebody that we think so highly of as a person and as a competitor and as a player, and it was a very tough decision to make.
I know Isaiah and the Players Tribune sort of expressed some hard feelings about the way that deal went down, the way Danny delivered the news. Do you guys have any regrets about how that was communicated to him, or is that just, I know you said it, you don't run it like a business, but is that just the reality of the NBA?
Yeah, it's not saying it's, if it's a business, it's a business of trying to win a championship. In other words, not just like a dollar, that wasn't a dollar and cents move. That was a move to try to take us a different step. Anyway, we all feel very strong about Isaiah, and I've seen recent things he said where he's happy that we're playing well and he thinks Kyrie's amazing. Isaiah's just a super quality person, and I'll be rooting for him. Although he'll be in a Cavaliers uniform, I'll be rooting for him when he comes back.
I want to talk a little about the Kyrie trade with you, Wick, because there was a moment there where I think a lot of Celtics fans were nervous, and I don't know if you were. It's like, is this deal going to go through? You know, Cleveland is looking at IT and saying, okay, we put him through the physical. We might need something more here. Was there ever a point that you thought this deal wouldn't go through? And I know you were on the radio yesterday, and you made a reference to Kyrie refusing to go back. So was the deal ever technically rescinded by Cleveland?
You know, we haven't. We've agreed with the league office not to delve into that deal and the intricacies of it because there are medical records involved and medical so forth. So we really just, I'll just leave it at where I said it yesterday that really I think Kyrie made it clear once he had gotten here and really met with all of us and spent time, you know, this is a place he wanted to be. I just leave it at that. But it was not that easy to get the deal done. It wasn't easy for us to pull the trigger and make the trade. I'm sure it wasn't easy for Cleveland to trade Kyrie to a rival in the East or an up-and-coming potential rival in the East, but we got it done.
Was there ever a point you thought it wouldn't get done? I know you had a dinner with Danny and Kyrie, and it's like the deal, you know, you guys had done the deal, but it hadn't been approved yet. So you're sitting down, you're meeting with this player, you're having this great dinner, and then all of a sudden it's like, wait a second, maybe this guy's not wearing a Celtic uniform.
Yeah, it wasn't clear it was going to get done. You know, deals aren't done until they're done, and this one had a period of time there where it was a few days of tentative yes, tentative no. You know, just had to play it out and at the end gave another second round pick and got the deal done.
Are you like a fan at that point? I mean, obviously, you know, you're owner of the Celtics, but are you checking your phone? Do I have a text from Danny? What's the latest? You know, or how are you responding to that time?
Well, the text I got was from Dan Gilbert, said, are we going to get this thing done or not? So he and I got the deal done by text that day. That's how the deal ended up.
So that's interesting, Wick. You and Dan Gilbert, the owner of the Cleveland Cavaliers, getting that deal done. That's two guys that obviously have done a lot of deals in business and just made up their mind that they were going to get this deal consummated. Now, in that deal, Wick, you had to give up one of the Brooklyn picks. It's the last Brooklyn pick in 2018. And that takes me back to this draft. You guys finally win that draft lottery. I'll try not to bring up 2007.
Let's
know that's bad.
Who did win it? I was sitting out there.
You were there. You got it. You had to be excited because I know 2007
was painful
for you.
I was standing on stage on television next to Magic Johnson and Joel Embiid going, who's that guy? I'm sure. And nobody cared who it was. But anyway, that was me, by the way. And I really had a fun time winning that lottery.
Yeah, I know. Especially after 2007 when you didn't. I know. That one was tough. So you were the lucky charm.
Listen, I'll tell you, whatever happened in 07, it ended up working out.
Well,
so,
isn't that the truth? I mean, having the new big three.
We did not. We went from the second ranking to the fifth pick in 07.
Yeah.
Anybody doesn't remember.
Yeah, that was tough at the time, but it worked out great. Got you a championship with Kevin Garnett, Paul Pierce, and Ray Allen. But you win this lottery. You have the number one pick, and you guys make a decision to trade down to number three. You make a deal with the Philadelphia 76ers who take Markelle Fultz at one. You guys take Jason Tatum, who's been fantastic this season, at three. Why was Jason a better fit for you guys than Markelle Fultz?
Well, I will tell you that when the picks come up, Danny makes them. So we look to Danny to lead our talent evaluation. And so trades are another thing. There's more input and there's more back and forth and there are more aspects to it. And he leads that process as well. But he really has total authority to make a pick once we have a pick, whether it's first or third. But the trade of 1 to 3 is, like I say, is a complicated process. But Danny really liked a number of people in the draft. Jason was at the top of his list. We thought we could get Jason at three, and we got an extra first-round pick that could be a very good one, potentially, in the deal. So we made the move, which was hard to do. I want to tell everybody out there listening, it is a lot easier when you own a team to do nothing, not to make a trade, not to go out there and expose yourself, not to say things like, we're going to try for fireworks 5 years ago, whenever I said it. I didn't promise fireworks. I promised we'd try for fireworks, and we finally got some. But you know, it's a lot easier to sit there and be passive or live in another city and not do anything and just go with the flow and not care. But if you really do care, you got to dig in and make these moves and take a risk, and that's what we do.
Was there ever a part of you that said, man, I finally won this lottery, Danny, and now you want to trade it? You want to trade this? Yeah. I finally won
it's
this
It's a lot
thing?
Easier to say, hey, we got the number one pick, make the pick. But then we really hashed it all through, decided that Jason was our guy, and still got him. So it was really like it was something I was willing to do.
Yeah, it's worked out really well so far, obviously, for the Celtics.
Well, they got a good player in Fultz and all of that, and we'll just see how everything moves forward. But we sure love watching Jason Tatum play.
Yeah, he's a lot of fun to watch. He's been a big part of this 19-4 start. So I didn't mention it. You mentioned it, technically. The fireworks comment. This is a comment you made to the Boston Globe's Gary Washburn in March of 2014. And when you look at that comment, I'm just going to read what you said to
Gary. Oh, thank you, because
Gary.
No one ever says what I said. They all twist it around.
Okay, I'll read the whole quote here. I've got confidence that with all these picks and these young guys and our willingness to spend money that we can get there. We're a patient group. We will take a multi-year plan if that's what it takes. But I think this June there could be some fireworks. I think this June we've got so many pieces to this puzzle that we might be able to shake loose a real piece or two for this team going forward. So I'm hoping it's sooner rather than later. For context, folks, that's the fireworks quote.
Yeah.
I know that's one that's
Boy,
been...
Boy, that was a boring quote.
I know that's one that's been stuck to you for a while. Was there ever
a
point...
I'm proud of it.
So there was never a point you regretted making that comment?
Never, ever. I mean, I'm looking for that. I've been looking for a banner for 15 years. You know, we got one. Now I'm looking for a second one. I've been to the finals twice. I want to be in the finals, you know, five more times. This is what I want. This is what I burn for and live for. I regret none of this. I don't regret a second of being at the Celtics. I put everything on the line for it, business-wise or whatever, you know, in a professional capacity. It's the love of my life.
Really?
I love the Celtics, and this is what I do. And then I have the love of my life in my personal life. But it's an amazing thing to be involved with the Celtics, and I don't regret a second of it, and I don't regret certainly that comment. That's what we go for around here, and people know it. And look who's come. Brad Stevens came because he believed. And then Al Horford chose us and came because he believed. And then Gordon Hayward chose us. And now here's Kyrie, and he's throwing his heart and soul into it. This is a place people want to be because of that passion.
Yeah, that's a really good point. I want to go back to the fireworks comment on this because I was at the Garden in 2016 for the NBA draft.
Were you booing?
I was not. You know, we're objective, remember? Remember, Wick, we're objective as reporters. We can't boo or cheer. But I was there when you announced the pick of Jaylen Brown with the third overall pick. And there was a lot of booing by Celtics fans. Do you feel vindicated at all watching Jaylen play now?
I felt at the time that I was going to use those boos. I wasn't sure who they were for. I assumed they were for me. Or the fact that we didn't make a trade is what it really was. They weren't booing Jaylen. They booed that they wanted us to make a trade.
They wanted the fireworks.
And there wasn't a trade to be made that we were willing to do. And I remember all the trades that were offered, and I remember all the details, and we're not going to discuss them.
Okay.
But and we can't. But,
that's a tease.
because it's just going to drag other players' names through the mud.
Okay.
You know, it's just not appropriate. But on other teams, you know. But I remember the whole thing, and it gives me energy ever since. I love it. Go for it. You know, let me know how you think and how you feel. And it's super sweet to have the guy be playing well. But we're not declaring victory. Everybody wasn't wrong. You know, maybe we should have made a trade. Maybe we shouldn't. We don't do everything right around the place. We just try as hard as we can.
Have you, as a fan, did you ever boo when you were a fan? Any team, not the Celtics, any team. Were you ever?
Unquestionably, I'm sure I did.
Okay.
I mean, that's part of being a fan. No problem.
So you understand.
Yeah.
All right, we're going to take a brief time out here on Season Ticket. We'll come back with more from Celtics co-owner, CEO, and managing partner, Wick Grousebeck. Stay tuned for that. Welcome back. If you like Season Ticket, be sure to subscribe to us on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts. Remember, subscribing is the best way to make sure you get our latest episode as soon as it's available. All right, we're back here with Boston Celtics co-owner, CEO, and managing partner, Wick Grousebeck. Wick, you mentioned something before about the people that have decided to join this organization and come to Boston, Brad Stevens, Al Horford, Gordon Hayward, Kyrie Irving. It's funny, there was a narrative, a media narrative, that this was a place where you couldn't attract star free agents or stars in their prime. Did you ever feel there was any truth to that when you guys were trying to add players to the roster?
It seemed to be true. It seemed that it was a tough place to attract people, and you need to trade for them. We hadn't ever had free agent cap room before, so we really didn't give it a real try. But anyway, it feels now like we are a real destination for people. People are choosing us, and I think the fans have a lot to do with it, and Brad has a lot to do with it. Those were two reasons that Al Horford cited when he came here as an example, and Brad and Al then lead to Gordon and lead to Kyrie being happy here, and so it all goes together. The fans are a big part of it.
Yeah, it's really interesting to me because that narrative was out there, and it's completely been erased. Kyrie Irving, who's 25 years old, has won a championship already, and this is where he wants to play. In a trade scenario where he basically could have said to Cleveland, no, I'm not going there.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not sure how much choice technically he had. I think, you know, he didn't have a no-trade clause. Anyway, I'm very glad he's here, and I'm glad that it all worked out to date. He seems very happy. I talked to him after the game last night, and I was in the locker room. I talked very briefly to Kyrie after the game, and, you know, he's just a happy guy here, and it's great to see.
Yeah, he's a really interesting guy. He's a really bright guy. I think he's a good fit for Boston. Just as a quick aside, where do you stand on the whole flat earth thing?
Oh, wherever Kyrie stands.
Okay.
I guess the earth is flat.
Well, I always say as long as Kyrie knows the ball is round, we're good. We're good from there on out. It doesn't matter what he thinks about the earth. To go back to the star player thing, was there ever a big name that you guys thought you were really close to getting? And you don't have to necessarily drop the name, but feel free to if you don't mind. And it didn't come to fruition for whatever reason. Like you mentioned, there have been all these trades over the years.
Well,
and you guys
were
really close to Durant, it seemed like.
I'll turn it around and say that we did get somebody, and I've mentioned this before, but really Kevin Garnett really was essentially a free agent. He had to agree to be traded here in 07.
Okay.
And so really a free agent that we did get was KG. And so this is an answer to a different question, but I think it's all relevant. KG was the first free agent who chose us because he had to agree. He had to do an extend and trade, which is a very rare thing. It's different than a sign and trade. And it's different than a trade and an extension. It's an extend and trade. So he had his signature on the trade. And so we appreciate him choosing us back in the day. There have been other guys we took a run at, and it's been reported. We brought Tom Brady on the plane down to the Hamptons and had a big meeting with KD, and that's all true. And KD went elsewhere. Hard to really blame him. To go to the Warriors, you know, they're a super team and they got even more super, but that's what he did. We felt like we were close.
Yeah, I think a lot of people felt like you guys were close on Kevin Durant, no question about it. And
the question is, did Kevin Durant feel like we were close?
Well,
I think he did, but we didn't make the final.
Yeah, we might never know that one. But that's a great point you raised, though, Wick, about Kevin Garnett, because I don't think people look at it the way you described it, but it's a good point.
But those are the facts.
Yeah,
so that's how they should look at it.
He had to choose it.
Yeah.
Did it take any sort of cajoling to get Kevin here, or...?
That was a process that happened over that summer. You know, remembering back to the trade, I got the call from the Minnesota owner. It came through on my cell phone when I was on a vacation. We got the deal done, but that was another owner-to-owner. Those were the only two in my career, and that was the Garnett trade. But anyway, got the call from Glenn Taylor. He said, you've got Kevin Garnett, and I think you're going to win the championship. Congratulations. And that was a call that came July 31st, I think it was, 2007. So it was the end of July. So it took all of July after the draft and the trade for Ray Allen to convince Kevin to get here.
Now, that's interesting. So I didn't know that's another owner-to-owner one. So you've been involved
in the only two that I can
two recall. Of the biggest transactions in Celtics history, the Kevin Garnett trade and the Kyrie Irving trade.
Yeah, well, I'm involved in everything. I'm definitely involved in all the things that go wrong. Things that go right, you know, it's Danny and it's Brad and it's Kyrie and people like that.
I want to ask you something about your team because it's been a great start to the season. But you said in the beginning of the year that you weren't really sure if your team was a true championship contender. I'm paraphrasing. Those were not your exact words. But do you feel at this point that your team is a true championship contender, or do you feel like you're maybe one superstar away, even with Gordon back?
We're 23 games in. We don't have Gordon. I think we're a team at the top tier of the NBA, but I can't say when I watch Golden State and Cleveland, the finalists. LeBron's been to 7 straight finals. As far as I can tell, there are a couple or three teams that are really up there. Houston, San Antonio always seems to be there. We'd love to be in that mix, but we're going to have to prove it before we say it.
If you have Gordon Hayward on the roster, healthy, next year, do you look at that core now with the young guys, Tatum and Jaylen Brown, taking steps and playing so well and say, okay, we need to add some role players, tweak it, deeper bench? Or do you look at that and say, we need one more star? Because you look at the NBA, there's sort of that hierarchy of stars normally on a championship roster. You mentioned Golden State is a super team. We all know what they have. Steph Curry, Durant, Draymond Green, Klay Thompson.
They have an 0-1 record against us this year.
That's true.
Which is pretty darn sweet.
Without Gordon Hayward on your team. So that leads me to that question. Do you feel, you know, with the healthy Gordon, you have enough, or do you need that one more star?
We don't have to make that decision now. We'll look in February at where everything is. We'll look in June and July and where everything is. I like where we are, and we've got extra draft picks coming up in the next few years as well. We want to be on a run of sustained relevance and top-tier play. You know, it's not contention. It's sustained, you know, getting better every year. Gordon, in the year, has improved himself, his numbers and his play, every single year that he's been in the NBA. They've gone up, which is really unheard of. I mean, just steady improvement. Now he's got this year where, you know, with this obvious physical setback. But if Gordon can come and be a, you know, a great contributor at an all-star level, you know, the sky's the limit for us over the next 5 years, but don't know exactly how it'll play out.
Yeah, I mean, I know there are a lot of passionate Celtics fans. I don't know how much they get to see Western Conference basketball. All you need to know about Gordon Hayward is that he was the best player on a team, the Utah Jazz, last year that made the playoffs in the West. And the West is a difficult place to make the playoffs.
He's a Western Conference All-Star, which is saying something.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, you look at the players that are over there. So, I mean, he's a very, very good player. So it'll be really interesting to see how he sort of assimilates into this team once he gets back healthy. You mentioned, you know, having to add a star, not necessarily a big decision you have to make, but a big decision you guys do have to make that's coming up at the end of the season, what to do with Marcus Smart. Smart's a really unique player, Wick, in that when you look at his maybe box score stats or what his shooting percentage is, and right now it's 31.3, it doesn't tell the full story of his impact on the games. How do you guys evaluate what Marcus Smart's value is to the Boston Celtics?
Yeah, well, there's a theme here, Chris, of I'm not going to talk about contract negotiations in advance. So you can ask, but I'm not going to answer that.
Yeah, I got to ask.
How do we... Well, you can ask if it's a little boring if I just say I'm not going to answer. But we evaluate Marcus Smart game by game along with all the other players, and he's a phenomenal contributor. He's, you know, a real heart and soul glue guy for the team. He makes so many plays that contribute to winning. When we've won a game, you can usually find Marcus's fingerprints on it, and we love having him as a Celtic.
It's interesting, though, because, I mean, obviously you're a business guy, and you know that a lot of times there can be undervalued assets. The things that Marcus does don't necessarily show up on a stat sheet. Does that make him an undervalued asset?
Well, his agent sees them all and lets us know about it, and we didn't come to a deal with his agent. So I don't know if he's undervalued or overvalued or what, but anyway, that's a discussion that we'll have at the end of the year.
I want to have a discussion with you about, you mentioned Kevin Garnett during this podcast, and this is the 10th anniversary of that great team, the Banner 17 team. And I know there was a little bit of strife between members of that team after Ray Allen left following the 2012 season, and he took his talents to South Beach and played for the Miami Heat. I know that Paul Pierce and Ray Allen have reconciled. Have Ray and KG reconciled? And what's your relationship
like? They haven't asked me to broker that.
So they haven't?
And I'm not on the text string or whatever's going on between those two guys. But, you know, when you're a champion together as a player, I assume there's always a bond. Those guys were very close, and I really think, you know, we're going to have a 2008 reunion coming up in the spring, and I'm sure everything's fine.
How's your relationship with Ray? Because at the time, you said, here's a quote from a radio interview you did, and you said, I think it's fantastic because it just roused me up that he went down to our arch rivals for half the price. I want to make it not an easier path to a ring. I'm going to make it a harder path to a ring if I have anything to say about it. I'm not going to say we wish him the best, but we wish him a difficult season in Miami.
That's very thoughtful of me. Very generous. Well, and then they won, by the way. So they did win. And he played a big part in it.
He
so
did.
Kudos to him. I will always think of Ray as I'll look forward to seeing him next time I see him. And he and his family, Shannon, his wife, they're amazing people and their kids. So I think nothing but the best and the highest praise for Ray.
You guys still golf buddies, you and Ray?
No, we are not golf buddies.
Okay, you haven't played with him in a while.
I don't play that much anymore, but no, we don't hang out, but that's not atypical. I really don't bother the guys. I'm kind of the suit in the office, and, you know, no problem.
You're selling yourself short, Wick. I've seen you out at practice in the shorts, and those guys see you out there.
Okay, well, unfortunately, if they see me in shorts, that can't be good. Put on some sweats.
Okay, all right. I wanted to ask you here about lottery reform. Because you played the 76ers last night, the whole trust the process thing, I don't want to say that they've tanked, but they had some teams that were pretty bad, and they were bad by design. I'll leave it at that. So you guys did this lottery reform. Now, the three highest seeds in the lottery will each have a 14% chance, as opposed to the top pick having 25%, the second pick 19.9%, the third pick 15.6% under the old system. And this will take place in 2019, will be the first year of this. Do you think this is enough? Was this a lottery reform that you wanted, or do you think maybe more should be done to discourage teams from designing teams that are intentionally bad?
Well, this is where we are. I voted for a tougher reform a few years back, but it got voted down, which was flattened it out even more. And the idea of flattening out these odds means, look, you're either in the playoffs or you've got a chance to get better towards the top of the draft. You know, and the teams that don't make the playoffs that are legitimately trying, you know, hard but just aren't as good, or they're a small market, they haven't been able to attract free agents. You know, the draft is really important in our league. It's more important in our league than any other league, because the best players can take a team to a championship because they can handle the ball every 24 seconds and they can also play defense, you know, the other 24 seconds. And, you know, there are only five guys on the court. There aren't 11 on a football team or whatever it is. So, or nine baseball team. You know, an individual guy really can't affect a baseball team. They don't touch the ball that often. Basketball, it's star-driven. And you get the LeBron James, you know, you're probably going to win a championship. And so we got to figure out who has the best chance to get the next LeBron, if there ever is one, at that level. And so it's probably the worst teams. But you flatten it out so that everybody out of the playoffs, you know, has a decent shot, and it reduces the urge to be the very worst team and legitimately just be terrible on purpose. And, you know, that's just not good to sell tickets. It's not good for the integrity of the sport. It just doesn't look good. It's tough to say the Celtics are playing someone who's doing that. You know, fans enjoy the game. Thanks for coming. You know, they're not going to enjoy the game as much, you know, right? So anyway, that's the reason to vote for a flattening, and it did get flatter, and let's see how it works.
Do you anticipate, or do you think there's any appetite among the owners to go even further than this?
Well,
or
this is where we are. Let's just going to see where it is.
Yeah. So that's interesting. It'd be interesting to see if this is something that works. I want to ask you about your coach, Brad Stevens, because I know you think very, very highly of him. And that
I'm not the only one.
Very, very important part of your success here. You signed him to a six-year extension, is that correct?
Yep, last summer.
Do you ever worry about Brad getting that itch to go back to the college game?
Well, I thought we put that to rest. I mean, those questions came last year, and he re-upped with us for 6 years. He's put that question to rest.
So not a concern for you guys?
Not a concern for me. He wants to win a banner just as bad as I do.
Is there anything else you want to add here, Wick? I feel like we covered a lot of ground. Anything about your team that you want to get in, or any sort of commentary on your team?
So, Chris, I would like to say, I mentioned it before, but the fans are really an important piece of what we do with the Celtics. And we do this, those of us, we're the fans who bought the team, this group. We do this for the people who went before. We do this for the greats of the past, and as many of them as possible are still with us, still at the games, still part of the organization. But we're like trustees that hold this great Celtics institution in honor of those who built it, and, you know, to try to pass it on to the future generation. Like, it's a really meaningful thing to me personally. It's not that I own it. It's that we are trying to take care of this great thing. And so the fans are a big piece of that. And we thank them. You know, they're selling out every game. They make a difference when free agents look at us. They make a difference when we win these games. It's because the fans are going crazy. It's a big piece of it. And I just want to thank them. And they know we're all in it together. But we appreciate them very much.
Yeah, I think right now, Wick, you have a lot of happy Celtics fans with this 19-4 start. We certainly appreciate you taking the time to join us here on Season Ticket.
All right. I'll see you tomorrow. Want to do it again?
Yeah, let's do it. We can make this a regular thing. Come on. We're much, much nicer than Felger and Maz. All right, that is Celtics co-owner, CEO, managing partner Wick Grousebeck. Join us here on Season Ticket. Thanks again, Wick.
Glad to be here.
And that's it for this edition of Season Ticket. Every Friday, we like to thank the folks behind the scenes here who make this podcast possible. Season Ticket is produced by Steve Safran, Josh Schwartz, Scott Thurston, Joe Sullivan, our great new engineer, Paul Vikas, Jessica Alpert, John Parati, Matthew Reed, and our intern, Brendan Coughlin. I'm Chris Gasper. Have a great weekend. We'll see you on Monday.